Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 229, Smorgasbord, June 2023. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host. This is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having some fun. And today I've got a smorgasbord episode for you. And in true smorgasbord fashion, we'll be sampling some different topics throughout this episode today. The most important thing to know right out of the gate is where to find the show notes for this episode. So I'm going to link some recipes later on, things like that. You're going to want to take your web browser and enter kitchencounterpodcast.com/229. That will take you to the show notes for this episode where I will have links, photos, whatever it is of things that I talk about in today's episode. It also has links to my social media, my email, which is feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. If you want to shoot me a note, ask me a question, or request a topic for an upcoming episode, send an email to me. I'm happy to take a look at it and see what I can do. On today's show, I've got a few different things I'm going to talk about. I've got an upcoming trip I want to mention to folks. I have a couple of new recipes that I have discovered in the last couple of weeks that I wanted to share. And then we had a listener email with a question about condiments. So we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about some favorite condiments from around the world. kitchencounterpodcast.com/229 for the show notes to get to all of that good stuff. All right, before we even get into that, I just have to share a quick little story, and you'll forgive me because it's not directly food related, but I'll be really quick about this, but I just have to share because it's so crazy. So it is the beginning of June 2023 as I record this, and both my wife and I work from home during the day. My son's at school still at the moment. So I think it was last Friday, and I was in the office in her house and sort of in the back part of our house working away. My wife was working, but she had come down to the kitchen, which is right next to the office and looks out over our backyard. And anyway, I'm working away, you know, replying to an email or whatever. And she's like, Roger, come in here really quick. Oh my gosh, you know. So I'm like, uh-oh, what's going on? So I go into the kitchen. She's looking out the back window in our backyard. And in our backyard, which is not a huge backyard, and just so you know, we live in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. There's lots of greenery, lots of shrubs and trees and everything. So our backyard this time of year is fairly lush. And we've got a little garden shed back there against the fence in the back. And next to that, in an area we've been trying to kind of fix up and weed, it's very weedy right now. We haven't had a lot of chance to get back there and sort of clean it up. We have a little bench that we like to sit on, you know, at lunch or whatever, just to get some sunshine when it's nice. Anyway, underneath this bench, there's this animal sitting, and she's like, what is that? And I said, I think it's a fox. Underneath our bench in the backyard, just chilling out in the shade of the bench, is a little gray fox. And if that's not cool enough, she's got babies, and the little babies are traipsing around our backyard. I've never seen anything like this here. I mean, we have raccoons, and I've seen possum, and I know we have skunks because I smell them occasionally, but I've never seen a fox in the backyard. It was crazy. Apparently, they had made a den under our garden shed. So I called Fish and Wildlife. I'm like, what should I do about this? There's a gray fox in our backyard with some babies. And the woman on the other end said, you know, we don't relocate them or anything, and they're going to probably move on in a few days or a week. So if you can just let them be, that's the best thing. Just let them be. They're not going to probably hurt anything. If you can swing that, that would be the best thing. And she said, and you can enjoy them while they're here. So our neighbor does have cats that run around. I think we have neighbors with chickens around, but, you know, they're all in coops and should be protected and all that kind of stuff. So I guess for the time being, we've got a little fox family living in our backyard. They're really adorable. I'll post a picture, or maybe even a little video snippet if I can, at the show notes. The next day, we got up early, and Tracy, my wife, looked out of our upstairs window into the backyard, and there were actually three kits, three baby foxes, and they were enjoying breakfast. Looked like maybe a gray squirrel or I think that's what it was when we looked at it at the time. But yeah, we've got a little fox family in the backyard. Totally crazy. I know not food related, but kind of cool. And I wanted to share. That's a first for me, most definitely. So I'll put a picture in the show notes so you can see. You'll have to forgive the messy area of the backyard. Like I said, we haven't really gotten a chance to get out there and clean it up this spring yet. But yeah, gray foxes. Crazy, huh? All right. That was unfood related. I apologize. Hopefully you can give me a little grace there. I just had to share the crazy news. More food related. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you'll probably recall back in 2019, my brother and I took a trip to New Orleans. And I think we even released an episode from when we were there, probably a crazy, goofy episode. So go back and listen at your own risk. But we're actually going to be back out in New Orleans in a couple of weeks. We're going out later in June. You know, the first time we went was right before the pandemic hit. It really took off in early 2020, and we've been wanting to get back out there again. So we finally were able to make it happen this June. We've booked the trip a while back, but we're going to be heading out there soon. And I am going to be putting together a special episode, probably not while I'm in New Orleans. I won't release it, but I'm going to capture some audio for it. We're actually taking a day trip into Cajun country. We're going to be taking a day to drive the Bayou Teche Scenic Byway, which is about a couple hours west of New Orleans near Lafayette, Louisiana. But it runs north to south. Actually, it's like a big snake. Teche, I believe, is snake. So the Bayou Teche Byway follows the Bayou Teche. And we're going to hit the towns of Bro Bridge, Louisiana, New Iberia, which is near Avery Island, the home of Tabasco hot pepper sauce. We're gonna head out there and check that out. Morgan City. And then we're going to basically make a big loop. From New Orleans, we're going to go north and then west, and then make a big loop south and then back east to New Orleans. We're going to make a day out of it, but we're going to eat some good Cajun food, I hope, along the way. And I'm going to record our progress and put together a little episode for our day trip to Bayou Teche. Now, there's not a lot of time before we leave for that, but if any of you have any good insight on places to stop or things I absolutely have to eat while I'm on that byway, shoot me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com as soon as you can so I can get the good info. We'll be spending a few days in New Orleans as well. I'm going to be stopping by, of course, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in town to see my friend Liz Williams. And of course, you know that the Kitchen Counter, this podcast, is part of the Nitty Grits Network, which is a network of shows about food, drink, and culture. It's hosted out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, and I have not been able to go out there since this show became part of the network. So I'm excited to meet Liz, hopefully meet some other folks, maybe Brian Diaz of the NOLA Drinks show as well while I'm out there. And if you want to learn more about the Nitty Grits Network, by the way, head over to the museum's website at southernfood.org. And you can find my show along with some other shows and all the other cool stuff that the museum's doing while we're out there. Now, the other thing I'll mention about this trip, I've said it before on the show, I'm not a huge social media guy. I've got all the social medias, but I'm terrible at keeping them updated and finding the time to work on them. But I will be pretty active on Instagram while I'm there. I'll be posting to my story and things like that of our trip around not only Cajun country, but also our time in New Orleans as well. So if you're interested in New Orleans, Southern food, yummy food and drink, definitely go to my Instagram, instagram.com/kitchencounterpodcast. So anyway, New Orleans and Cajun country trip coming up. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to share what new food discoveries I make while I'm down there. I can tell you, I'm definitely going to be hitting up the Boudin because, again, if you've listened to the show, you know that or even our last New Orleans episode from 2019, Boudin, which is a Cajun, traditionally like a Cajun pork liver spice sausage with rice, is like one of my favorite things to eat now. Of course, here in Oregon, I don't find it very often, so I've been trying to make it myself when I can and figure that out. But I'm excited to get back down there and eat probably my weight in Boudin, not going to lie. But we'll see what else I find while I'm down there. I've got a couple of recipes, not my recipes, but recipes I've I've used in the last couple of weeks that I want to share with you, which I think are really cool. And I will link to them in the show notes. There might be one I can't link to, but I'll figure out a way to share it with you. Do you remember a while back, maybe a year ago, I was talking about Greg and Sean McAnuff's original Flava Caribbean Recipes from Home, that cookbook? I think I used a jerk chicken recipe out of their cookbook and talked about it again, probably last summer. Last weekend for Memorial Day weekend, had some family over, and I was trying to figure out some yummy drink to make and serve, a drink that could be non-alcoholic or alcoholic if somebody wanted to add something to it. So I was going through my cookbooks, and I came across a pineapple punch recipe in their original Flava cookbook. Extremely simple, but I have to tell you, it was so good. I'm going to be making this more this summer, and I just wanted to share it with you in case you're looking for a delicious, refreshing, summertime type of a punch. It's not low calorie and it's not low fat, I will warn you now, but it's delicious. It's simple too. It's a big jar of pineapple juice. You know, you can get like the Dole, like a 1.5 liter size pineapple juice. You can get other brands too. But it's basically pineapple juice, a can of sweetened condensed milk, and then a little bit of lime juice, brown sugar, vanilla extract, a pinch of cinnamon, a little nutmeg. And you blend it up in a blender, and you have, and then you throw it in a serving pitcher and throw it in the fridge to cool it down. And then when it comes time to serve, you just pour it over some ice and you're good to go. Now, if you want, if you're inclined, you could add a little rum or maybe a little coconut rum to your individual glass to kick it up a notch, but just stir it up, you know, to reincorporate it. And it's this sweet, tart, creamy, really quite refreshing beverage. I was surprised. I wasn't sure what to make of it with the condensed milk, but it kind of reminded me. It reminded me of two things, actually. It sort of reminded me of like a pina colada in a way, but it also reminded me, do you all remember Orange Julius? Those drinks you would get in the mall, and it was like an orange drink, but it was kind of creamy. It was this punch was almost like a pineapple dreamsicle. Very good. Very good. I'll figure out how to get the recipe in the show notes for you so you can take a look at that. You should just get the whole cookbook, though, Original Flava by the McAnuff Brothers. Really good Caribbean recipes. If that's a type of cuisine you're interested in, you could do a lot worse than picking up that cookbook. It's been out for a few years now, but really good recipes. And that pineapple punch, man, whew, I'd probably gain 20 pounds if I had it every week. But, I mean, it's a keeper. All right, next recipe discovery I've made, and I've never had this before, but my wife subscribed me to Cook's Country magazine. Now, Cook's Country is made by the great folks over at America's Test Kitchen, and it's got usually, I don't know, 20 or 25 recipes in every issue, and it's really good quality stuff in these magazines. So I got in the mail the June-July 2023 edition of Cook's Country. It's called The Dog Days of Summer. Got lots of interesting summertime fare in here, but the one that jumped out at me and the one that we made a couple of weeks ago was Okinawan taco rice. And that's Okinawan as in like Okinawa, you know, the Japanese island, right? Okinawa. Okinawan taco rice. And it looked good and it sounded sort of refreshing, so we made it. And it's very similar to any sort of a taco bowl you would have probably had. And I've made these 1,000 times, right? It's rice, some taco meat, some toppings like, cheese, lettuce, salsa, you know, whatever it is. And you just throw it in a bowl, some beans maybe, and you enjoy it. So I'm like, what's Okinawan taco rice? Well, it's very, very similar to any old taco bowl. It's got a few additional ingredients, which I'll talk about in a second. But apparently, Okinawan taco rice took off in the mid-20th century, and it was adapted from Marines who were stationed on the island, and they would bring the American version of tacos, right? We all know the basic American version of a taco is like ground beef, taco seasoning, cheese, you know, sour cream, or whatever it is. Anyway, the folks in Okinawa took this and they adapted it with some Japanese flavors. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, Okinawan taco rice has become a huge fast food hit in Japan. And it's sort of spreading its wings internationally now. And so I made this. And here's what makes this a little bit different. And by the way, I will link to this recipe. It's available on America's Test Kitchen's website. If you have an account there, of course, you can get it. If you don't have an account there, you get like three recipes free, right? So hopefully you can get a hold of it that way, even without having to subscribe to America's Test Kitchen or Cook's Country or whatever by going to their website. Again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/229. I'll put the link in here. But let me open it up just so I get this right. Here's essentially what you've got in Okinawan taco rice. Of course, white rice. And then you've got an onion. You've got lean ground beef, taco seasoning. And we're talking about your run-of-the-mill, off-the-shelf McCormick's or whatever taco seasoning. It has a recipe for its own blend, too. But really, you know, the packet or whatever you get at the store is just fine. And then you would make that up like you would, like you were making a taco bowl. They call for Monterey Jack cheese, iceberg lettuce, an avocado, some just a jar of tomato salsa to garnish. So very typical taco ingredients. Where it turns a corner and actually really elevates this dish, I wanted to make this like the next day again already because it was so addictively tasty. When you're cooking the ground beef and you've cooked it up with the taco seasoning, ordinarily, you'd be done there, right? But in this version, you add a little bit of ketchup, a little bit of soy sauce, a little bit of mirin, which is like a sweet cooking wine, and then instant dashi. Now, what dashi is, in instant form, it's a powder, but you may be familiar with dashi as sort of like a Japanese broth. It's made from smoked bonito, which is a tuna. So it's got sort of a real rich, umami, smoky, not real fishy, but that umami, smoky, and a little tang of fish underneath. It's got that flavor. And you mix this into the ketchup, and then you mix this into the taco meat. And then you finish assembling your taco bowl as you would, you know, rice, meat, and then all the fixins on top. It was so good. I don't even know why it was so good, but I could have eaten the whole batch of it myself. There's something about that extra seasoning, and I think it really comes down to the mirin and the dashi. You know, the mirin adds a little bit of sweetness to it, along with the ketchup. The soy sauce adds that saltiness. But the dashi, it was so flavorful, and that it played so well with the taco seasoning. It was really delicious. And I've been doing some research on dashi, and now I've got a bit of it in my pantry because I think it would be a fantastic flavor additive to a lot of things. You can even use the dried instant dashi, and think of it like this, like a bouillon cube or bouillon powder for chicken stock or vegetable stock. Think of dashi like that powder for dashi stock. You can use it even in a dry spice rub if you wanted to add that dashi flavor, that smoky umami flavor. So I'm already thinking in my mind, how else can I incorporate dashi into some of the things that I like to eat already that would add that interesting flavor. It also, by the way, probably has maybe in some cases seaweed or maybe even mushroom components in the dashi. You can also get vegan dashi that omits the fish completely and just sticks to the seaweed and the mushroom. But regardless, go check out if taco rice or tacos or rice bowls are even remotely appealing to you. You have to check out this Okinawan taco rice recipe. I'm making it again this week. So good. So good. Craveably good. All right. Moving right along, I mentioned in the intro that I was going to talk about condiments in this episode as well. So I want to get to this portion of the episode because I'm really excited about condiments. They're like my favorite thing. You know, I'm one of those people that has a door. My fridge door is full of them. My fridge is full of them. My pantry's full of them. I've got unopened condiments of various varieties that I've got so many I haven't even gotten around to using them yet or trying them out. And you know, condiments are something that just bring interesting flavor or texture, just variety to the food you're eating every day. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I got an email from a listener named Amba, and we were kind of chit-chatting back and forth, and I asked her, is there anything you want me to talk about on the show? And she wrote me back, and I'm just going to read a snippet of this email. I hope you don't mind, Amba, but I want to share this because it kind of sets up why I'm talking about condiments in this segment. So I asked Amba if there was something she'd be interested in, and she replied this way. One thing I would be particularly interested in is information on tasty condiments from different cultures. As my husband and I get older, we've noticed our appetite has diminished some, so I make smaller meals with fewer major components. I've started trying to put a couple of condiments with meals to give the plates a sense of color and variety without adding bulk, if you know what I mean. I've used, for instance, salsa or an Indian cucumber yogurt condiment or pickled ginger. I remember when we went to an Indian restaurant buffet, there were often numbers of delicious condiments. I don't know their names, but one I remember was made with tamarind and another mostly onion and a green minty one. I was thinking other cultures might also use tasty condiments. Amba, that's a great question. And I want to talk about this for a minute because I'm passionate about condiments. And you nailed it. Condiments are absolutely wonderful for adding color, variety, flavor, texture without adding bulk to a meal, right? So the purpose of a condiment is not to be the star of the dish. So you typically, there are exceptions, but you're typically not using a condiment for, let's say, the main sauce of a dish or any of the real main components. They're sort of added as the diner chooses. Some people don't like specific condiments. Some people put certain things on everything they eat and everywhere in between. And you asked about condiments from other cultures. So that's what I want to share a little bit. I think I've got like five condiments that I want to share briefly about today that might give you and other listeners some ideas for things they can incorporate into their cooking at their table. For each of these, I'll share a little, you know, what it is, a little bit about it. And then some of these I would recommend making fresh. Some I would recommend just buying a pre-made version because it's less hassle and you get better, more consistent results. I'll touch on that as I go through these. I might share a little bit about how I like to use them. And then if there are recipes or links to buy them, I'll put those in the show notes again over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/229. And then the other thing I would say about condiments and specifically for this segment is I'm not going to be talking about the standard ones like ketchup and mustard and relish and mayonnaise and, you know, like tomato salsa or you know, tartar sauce or sriracha or Tabasco, you know, whatever those really standard, well-known condiments are, at least here in North America. I think we can all agree those are great. We all like them to varying degrees. We're all somewhat familiar with them, so I'm not going to focus on those so much. I want to really touch on a few that may be new to some home cooks and maybe provide some ideas for ways they can use these that maybe they hadn't thought of before. And let's see, as I'm looking through my list, I notice I have a hot and spicy one. I've got an herby one. I've got a fruit-based, sour, acidic one. I've got a salty, briny one. I've got a couple salty, briny ones. So let me just start right off the bat here with my number one. We'll get the hot and spicy one right out of the way. And I've talked about this one on the show before, but I think it's, if you like hot and spicy, I think this is an absolutely fantastic condiment to have in your fridge at the ready because it's just a little different than your typical North American style hot sauces or even like a hot tomato salsa. And that is harissa, and that's spelled H-A-R-I-S-S-A. So harissa is a North African condiment made from hot peppers, usually fermented, along with a variety of other flavors, which would include garlic, coriander, caraway, cumin, and it's usually then mixed with olive oil. And you can find harissas that are ridiculously hot all the way down to fairly mild and anywhere in between. So this is going to scratch that hot and spicy itch. It's going to do it in a way, again, that's a little bit different from your typical hot sauce from North America because a lot of North American hot sauces are vinegar-based. typically, at least the harissas I've had, don't really have much in the way of vinegar or really strong acidic overtones. So you have this really rich, spicy, flavorful condiment that my favorite use of it, quite honestly, is as a breakfast condiment. I love it on eggs. I love it on hash. Just a little dab of it will just set my day on the right path. But of course, it's also great on things like couscous or lamb or chicken. It's just a wonderful thing to have a jar of in the fridge. Now, I do have some recipes for harissa. Truth be told, I prefer just to buy it, quite frankly, because you can get some interesting varieties and it's just a little bit easier and less time consuming, especially for me, because I really like the fermented aspect of harissa. And if I'm making it fresh, I probably won't go through that step. So I usually like to buy pre-made harissa just mainly for that. I think I've talked about the MINA brand, M-I-N-A brand harissa before. It's pretty good. When I was putting this list together, I just stopped into my Kroger and I saw that they had that brand on the shelf along with a couple of others. So I think a well-stocked grocery store with a nice international food aisle will probably have this. If not, you can find it very readily online, and I will put some links in the show notes. All right, next condiment I want to talk about is our herby entry. And I'll talk about the specific condiment, then I'll talk about it in a more generic sense too, because this is a very versatile method. But I want to talk about chimichurri, and that's spelled C-H-I-M-I-C-H-U-R-R-I. Chimichurri, it's an Argentine condiment, and it's an herb oil acid-based condiment. So for a chimichurri, typically it would be a mixture of olive oil, vinegar, and some combination of herbs, commonly garlic and onion, of course, parsley, oregano, salt, pepper, and maybe a little bit of hot pepper in there too, although it's not typically a hot and spicy condiment. But it's this fresh, rich, herb-forward condiment that's absolutely wonderful with grilled meats. That's my favorite method of using a chimichurri, but there's something to be said about this method of making a condiment that you can actually adapt very easily. And I do recommend that you make something like a chimichurri fresh, because I think the act of processing it so it's shelf-stable really changes the fundamental nature and quality of a chimichurri. It just takes the edge off that freshness, if you know what I mean. So I think fresh herbs, an olive oil, and then some sort of an acid like lemon juice or vinegar or something like that is really the way to go with this. But you can, as long as you understand the ratios, and I'll share a recipe for chimichurri in the show notes, you can take that ratio of herb oil, vinegar, or acid and use whatever herbs and spice level, if any, that you like. So you can really adapt this to suit your taste, to suit all the herbs you're growing in your backyard, whatever the case may be. This is very adaptable. But if you start with a traditional style chimichurri, you'll be extremely pleased if you put a bowl of this with a spoon on the table for your next cookout. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And again, I was just thinking, you know, another callback to that episode I did on the jerk pork, I think it was, last summer, out of that original Flava cookbook, that the jerk marinade, jerk sauce that I shared in those show notes also make a wonderful fresh condiment. It's very similar. It's got acid oil herbs, but it also has some things that make jerk jerk, like lots of thyme, allspice, and then some other flavors like cinnamon and things like that. And of course, fiery chilies like scotch bonnet or habanero. Of course, you can omit those or tone those down as you see fit. But that's just another example of this herb condiment that's fairly easy to make. So again, recipe in the show notes, but chimichurri is a great summertime condiment to master. Okay, Amba mentioned in her email that she would go to an Indian buffet and see some interesting sauces. So let's talk about that. And most likely, those sauces were all probably a form of chutney. So a chutney is an Indian spice. Of course, it's traveled around the world, largely in part thanks to the colonialism of the British Empire. But chutney is a very popular fruit-based condiment, usually spicy, usually acidic, usually with some sugar and other spices. But that can be a spicy, acidic condiment to add to your foods. And of course, great with curries, but great with a lot of other dishes where you want that spicy, acidic burst. Now, there are probably as many varieties and recipes for chutneys as there are for literally anything else you can think of. I mean, think of how many hot sauces there are in the United States, right? Thousands and thousands. Probably the same with chutney. But Amba mentioned a green minty one. That's a pretty popular one. It's usually like a cilantro and mint or some sort of an herb mint chutney. That's actually pretty easy to whip up on the spot fresh. For other chutneys, when they're more fruit-based, I guess it's one thing to chop up some fruit and mix it with some vinegar, oil, and spices and call it a chutney. I typically look for my chutneys pre-made in jars or bottles, you know, as I'm going to things like farmers markets or the farm stands where they usually have those sorts of interesting things or the international markets. You could go either way on whether you want to make a chutney from scratch or just buy it. I like to buy it because I usually find combinations with ingredients that maybe I wouldn't be able to get a hold of or interesting ideas and flavor combinations that I would not have thought of. So generally, I go that route with the chutney. But again, they can range from mild to very spicy, depending on the recipe you're using or the variety that you're buying. But again, generally fruit, sugar, acid, and spices for a chutney, but they can make a wonderful accompaniment. And if you can find sweeter chutneys, which they do exist, those can also be wonderful for, you know, appetizer plates or even for breakfast spreads and things like that. And depending on the type of chutney, sometimes this is something that you can mix with other ingredients to make an entirely new condiment. For example, thinking of sort of that party platter or an appetizer plate or just, you know, you don't make a snack plate for dinner. Sometimes we like to do that too. You could mix chutney with, say, cream cheese and make an entirely new spread for your crackers or your crostinis or whatever the case may be. So chutney can also be combined with other condiments to make new things. So because there are so many varieties, again, I'll put a few links to different recipes in the show notes and a couple of chutneys that I've tried that you can buy online. Let's move on to the salty, umami, briny category, and we're going to jump into that with tapenade. If you're familiar with tapenade, the first thing that probably jumps to your mind is olives, because that's one of the primary ingredients in pretty much every tapenade, at least a traditional tapenade. And like all of these condiments so far, there's lots of varieties. And as you look at the more boutique offerings in, you know, the fancy food stores and things like that, you'll find all sorts of different flavors and flavor profiles of a tapenade. But traditionally, this is a condiment that comes from the Provence region of France. It generally looks like a thick, spreadable paste. I've already mentioned olives, ripe olives, that is, the darker olives, right, is a primary ingredient. But then you add in some anchovy, some capers, olive oil, lemon juice, spices, and then you end up with a really salty, briny, really complex flavor. And just look at the three main ingredients I mentioned, olives, which are typically fresh olives aren't so briny, but typically olives are you can salty briny, anchovies typically salty briny, capers of course have that flavor profile as well. So you can already see just with those three ingredients in a tapenade, you're going to get a really strong, a little goes a long way condiment here. Again, to tickle that umami, rich, savory, salty briny flavor palette. Tapenades are very versatile when it comes to using them as a condiment. It can be served with fish, with meats, again, as sort of a dip or a spread for your snack plates. It's great with raw vegetables. And tapenades aren't that difficult to whip up on your own, although personally I tend to just buy them pre-made because By the time I buy all of the ingredients, which I don't really keep, I don't really keep capers on hand. I don't really keep olives on hand. I, you know, typically don't keep anchovies on hand, although I love all of those things. By the time I buy all those and put them together, I might as well just go buy a small jar of tapenade that, you know, a little will go a long way. And once you open a tapenade and put it in your fridge, you're probably looking at a week or two before you're going to toss it out if you haven't eaten it already. So I would just go look for a small jar of tapenade to start out with to see if that's something that you like or that you enjoy the flavor of. It can add a ton of flavor without adding much bulk at all. And that's the same, of course, with all of these condiments, right? Again, I mentioned at the beginning that the purpose of a condiment is not to add a lot of volume or be the star of a dish, but to bring, a punch of interesting flavor or texture or color. And a tapenade will do all of that for you. So if you've never tried a tapenade, definitely put that on your list. If you're not a big olive person, it could be a tough hurdle to get over. Although, like, my wife is not a big olive person, but she does enjoy a good tapenade. So I think because the olive texture is sort of not her thing, you know, but a tapenade is, the olives are incorporated into a paste. So it's not quite as olive forward, if you will. So tapenade, and that is spelled, by the way, T-A-P-E-N-A-D-E. Check that out. That's a great entry in that salty briny category. Now, my last condiment I want to mention is really kind of a variation on a very common condiment that we probably, many of us anyway, probably have sitting around at home. And that common condiment would be soy sauce. But again, I said I wasn't going to talk about the regular stuff. Instead, I want to talk about a kicked up version of soy sauce that's called ponzu, P-O-N-Z-U. Now, we've all tasted soy sauce, I'm sure. It's a very rich, salty flavor profile, right? It's a great dipping sauce, and it's a great addition to any dish where you want to add just a layer of more complex, salty, and again, I'm going to use the term umami for that rich, savory flavor. But ponzu sauce takes it a couple of steps further. So ponzu will look like a soy sauce. It's usually dark in color, but it's got a few key differences when it comes to flavor. First and foremost, it has a citrus flavor to it. So it's got citrus. It's going to have more of a sharp vinegary taste, probably because it has some rice vinegar in it. It's going to have mirin or sake in it. And again, that's a sweet alcohol taste. Seaweed generally, or kelp, dried bonito flakes. Remember, we talked about dashi a while back. Same thing. It's that dried smoked fish flavor. So what happens when you bring all of this sort of against the canvas of a what you might consider just a plain soy sauce, which is really just that salty flavor, now you've got some tart from the citrus, you've got some sweet from the mirin, you've got some even more umami notes from the addition of the kelp and the seaweed and the dashi. And where I like to use soy sauce as a flavoring agent, as an add-in for things, ponzu, to me, is really so wonderful and so unique that I almost strictly use it as either a dipping sauce or to sprinkle onto dishes. I typically don't like to mix it in because I think then you just sort of obliterate the beauty of this very delicate sauce. So I like to use it as a sprinkle on for, let's say, steamed or roasted vegetables, as a dipping sauce for anything, really. But again, it's very salty, right? So a little bit of it will go a long way. But if you like soy sauce and you like to use soy sauce for a dipping sauce or as a sprinkle on to things, definitely try ponzu. Another variety you'll probably see is yuzu ponzu, Y-U-Z-U ponzu. It will be similar to a regular ponzu, except that a yuzu is a Japanese citrus. Those are also very good. So whether you get a regular ponzu or a yuzu ponzu, you're getting roughly the same thing, although a lot of people will tell you that the yuzu is far superior. It's good. I would not deny that. If you do happen to pick up a ponzu and you've never had it before, it is salty like soy sauce, but if you can, if it's possible for you, I would actually just try like a drop, like just straight, just a drop of soy sauce and then a drop of ponzu, and you'll really see the difference. It will be very marked difference between the two, and you'll see what I'm talking about when it comes to the citrus, the sweet, the smokier flavor in a ponzu as opposed to a regular soy sauce. You're not going to be making this at home, I'm sure, from scratch. Maybe there's some hardy souls out there that make their own soy sauce. So just go for the pre-made variety. There's lots of reputable brands that make really good ponzu. Again, I'll put links to all of those in the show notes. Okay, I could go on and on forever about condiments, but I won't. So let me recap 5 condiments from non-North American culture that I think a home cook should take a look at. One in the hot and spicy category was North African harissa. South American chimichurri for an herby, bright condiment that you can easily make at home. Chutney, the Indian entry, fruit, vinegar, sugar, spice-based condiments, and really even more varied than that. Tapenade for your briny, salty, really umami-rich flavors. And then ponzu, when just ordinary soy sauce won't do it. Amba, thank you for the email. Thank you for the question. Love talking about this. I hope this gave you some interesting new ideas for maybe some condiments to try at home. And all the rest of you listening, let me know what you think. If you have a favorite condiment from another culture, send me an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Let me know. And maybe I'll have to do another segment in the future for 5 more condiments that we should be trying out. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another episode. I hope you enjoyed that. Again, the show notes are kitchencounterpodcast.com/229. My email is feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. If you have any ideas for places I need to eat in Cajun country, in Louisiana or New Orleans for that matter, shoot me an email ASAP. I'd love to hear about that. Southernfood.org. For the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, not only just a great place, but a home to the Nitty Grits podcast network, of which The Kitchen Counter is a part of. Lots of other great shows on the network. I think we're in the works to adding a few more soon as well. I hope you're finding time to get in the kitchen. And aside from just getting by and making food for your family and for your friends, I hope you're able to try some new things and experiment a little bit and spread your home cook wings just a little bit farther than you've spread them before and try some new things. All right, everybody, until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.